story. Let's start. Parsha Nelson starts off with Davar Hashem Moshe Lemor. God spoke to Moses, saying, Nelson was Rosh B'nai Gershon, Gam Him Levesol, Son of the Mishpachosam. Lift up the heads of B'nai Gershon, also them, to the house of their fathers according to their families. You should know, by the way, usually when the counts are made with the word Nasso. It's used with the word Nasso as the word of lifting up. Why do we use that word of lifting up? What are we lifting up and what are we referring to when it says that? It should say the word Pakod, as in count. It should say other words. Hey! But it should say any of those words. But Nasso is a weird word to say. Nasso is a very, very strange word to say. So why did it say that? Also, what happens at the end of the Parsha? What happens at the very, very end of the Parsha? Tell me, what do we do at the end of the parsha?
God's telling Moses from the top.
More. What happens at the end of the parsha? It's like three Aliyahs on it.
They add up all the stuff, or they
count it
individually. Then they add them.
What do you mean? No, it's not the counting. What happens at the end of the parsha? It's like three Aliyahs.
Yeah, the offering or what, like the
all the korbanos. All the korbanos are brought up from all the Nesiim. There's 12 Nesiim, and each one brings a korban. And each one, it goes to each person. Korbano, karas kazavacha, shoshim oyo, mishkalo, mishkalo, kachal kazach, shagol shagol, godesh. And it goes on and on and on. It's unbelievable how it just goes on. It's in the Nesiim. It starts off the parsha that says Nasso, used in the word of counting. The end of the parsha goes into the word Nesiim, which refers to the princes, the guys who are in charge of Klal Yisrael, the guys who are in charge of each one of the Shvatim. So why use this Lashon by each person in Klal Yisrael, in counting them, and then use it for the leaders of Klal Yisrael in the very, very end? What's the connection between them? This is a time in Hagim that says there's Musar in the word Nasso. Anybody know what the word Nasso means? Translate it literally.
You mean a stick or something?
Carry.
It means to carry, lift up. Lift up and put high in the air, to elevate. That's a good word for it, to elevate. That's number one. But Nesiim can also be translated as something else. Nesiim can also be clouds, which we know dissipate into the air very, very quickly, depending on the wind, depending on the structure of the sky. Clouds dissipate very, very quickly in the sky. A leader of B'nai Yisrael is just like that, just like any leader of any nation. A leader can be somebody who everybody will talk about for the rest of time, which is just another nation that makes absolute nothingness in the wind. I saw a great quote from Hitler, Yimach Shemam. He said, there are people, there are leaders that will never be known, and there are leaders who make themselves known. It's a quote from Yimach Shemam. Yimach Shemam, it's an unbelievable line, but it's 100% true. A leader can either be a leader who just goes down in the annals of history as being just another guy, or there's a leader who really became a leader. I'll give you like a quick example.
The German leader?
What?
You said that, the German leader?
Yes. Gerald Ford. What did he do? He's president of the United States. Nah, Yimach Shemam. Don't have to worry about saying Yimach Shemam. Like, what did he do? He didn't do anything. But George Bush will go down in history as being the worst rated president of all time. He did something. He might not have done something good, but might say he did something that made himself known. From now on, everybody is going to know who George Bush Jr. is. They all know who Franklin Delano Roosevelt is. Everyone knows FDR because he was the guy who was in charge at the time and doing all this, doing all that during the times of war. You always hear about these leaders who make themselves into something. But when it comes to a certain type of a leader who did absolutely nothing, unless he does something afterward, like Jimmy Carter did absolutely nothing when he was president except claim that he saw an alien. But aside from that, Jimmy Carter did absolutely nothing until afterward, where he started the Peace Corps and he did this and did that and claimed I'm such a great guy. And yeah, it started Islamic fundamentalism and everything that Jimmy Carter was very well known for. He's one of the biggest idiots to have ever become president. I don't think there's anybody that comes even close to him. I mean, somebody like that is just like an Nesiim. It could be a cloud that just dissipates very, very quickly. So a leader of B'nai Yisrael can work in two different ways. Either we could be Zocha, and the leader of B'nai Yisrael can help B'nai Yisrael reach higher and higher levels. That by doing the right things, they bring B'nai Yisrael to become better people. You know what that is? I mean, Moshe, this is not just Tom. This is like you go up to a better level. The leader does things in which everybody gets raised. Everybody gets something better. They improve the economy. They make sure that everybody davens. They make sure that everybody's out there. By the times of Chizkiah, they say that there wasn't a single woman and child that wasn't an expert in Tuma and Tara. Tuma and Tara. We don't even know what Tuma and Tara is. Nobody does Mishnah Taras. We don't even know what's in Mishnah Taras. I think it starts with Kalim. We don't know anything about that. But they were experts. The women and the kids were experts in Tuma and Tara. But when it comes to other leaders, leaders will just let things go and whatever. They're just Nisim Baruach. They're dissipating clouds in the air and they're nothing. They're little things, wisps in the air. And that's it. You just get a little odd reference in a history book. Yeah, there was this guy also. This guy was also a leader. This guy was also there. It just happens like that. So what does a leader want to do? dude, does a leader want to become a Nasi? A Nasi is lifting everybody up, or does he want to be the Nasi in the clouds? Too many times the leader is just Nasi as in clouds. Too many times it's like that. The exact same word is used for the rest of Klal Yisrael with good reason. A person might see himself in the grand scheme of things and say, listen, specifically talking about the people of Bnei Gershon, I'm just one of about 7,000 people. I'm just one of about 603,550 people. I mean, I'm just one of just how many people are there in all of Klal Yisrael? Probably about 3.6 million people, not including, you know, if you include the women and the children and the older people and everything. We're talking about one out of 3.6 million. What in the world can I do? To that, a Kaddish Baruch Hu says, Naso is Rosh Bnei Gershon. We use the word Naso when counting somebody. The reason why Naso is, yeah, you could be a nothing, you could be a nobody, you could just go down as another thing in history, or you could actually make something of yourself. You want to make something of yourself? You want to be something? Lift yourself up. Improve on yourself. Write something. Do something. Help out other people. So you'll actually be known instead of just being another thing through time. Another thing through time. Call it like a scary, I don't know, call it like a little bit, you know, a little bit too close to home. But this vort is an unbelievable vort when somebody passes away. When somebody passes away, whether it's in your family or somewhere else, somebody passes away, it's just like something to think about and just say, did this guy make something of himself? Are people going to remember this guy years from now or not? Are people going to remember this guy or not? It's a scary, scary business. What are people going to say about you after you pass away? Isn't it a sobering thought to think about what your eulogy is going to be like? What it's going to be like? I know, I realize we're all 20. I'm 28 years old. And I'm not thinking about what's going to be, you know, another, hopefully another 92 years from now when the effects will finally come in, you know? But like the fact is, it's still, it's a crazy thing. What are they going to say about you? They're going to say, like, great guy, tried really hard. We got to go to lunch. So let's go. Let's hurry up this funeral and get it over with. It's going to be a eulogy. What?
Whatever he put his mind to, he did.
Whatever he put his mind to, he did. So, Moshe, that's going to be our first line for you. That'll be the first line after 120. That'll be the first line out there. It's just it's a crazy little thing, but yeah.
There's this book called Tuesday's Memoriam. It's a very famous book.
Oh, yeah, I read it. Mitch Albom. He's a jerk. The guy's a kofer beyond belief. I absolutely hate the book. Absolutely hate the book. Yeah. Keep going.
This guy, Murray, is a professor. He knew he was dying. He conducted a funeral for himself.
100%.
He wanted to see what everyone would say about him.
It's crazy. You know, unbelievable, exactly. Absolutely unbelievable. And the five people you meet in heaven, he also wrote that, right? Absolutely. I was going to punch him in the face when he wrote the five people you meet in heaven. Makes it to be just like literally a carnival ride. Literally a carnival ride. If anybody's read the book, it's the most. My mom was like, "You got to read this book." She told me it's like 100 pages. You'll read it in about 20 minutes. I'm a quick reader. So I decided, all right, I'm gonna go through it. I read both of his books in about an hour. I sat there and I'm just like, I can't believe I just wasted an hour of my life on this absolute. And I don't want to say the word right now because I'm on tape. What I said at the time, I couldn't believe how bad this was. Couldn't believe how bad it was. What?
Just pause it.
Just pause it for a second. No, I don't feel like it. I think everybody knows what I'm about to say. Okay. Garbage. That's what I was going to say. I just don't like saying that on tape. Yeah, that's too much. All right, number two. We're done with the numbers of the Levium, counting up the Levium. We get into a strange subject in the Torah, possibly the strangest. The Sota. Such a strange concept, no? That there's a woman who sleeps around, or no, we don't even know if she slept around. She might have slept around. The guy suspects her, accuses her, and says, did you go together with that guy? The guy, she says, no. Don't get together with that guy ever again. Warns her, don't get together with that guy ever again. If there's at least one aid, the only time we have one aid that's really kosher for anything in the Torah, Eidecha Nema Bisur, by certain things, but where one aid is really kosher, one aid goes out and sees them get together in the same room, immediately she's taken down to the Beis HaMikdash, she's brought to the Beis HaMikdash, she's fed this crazy water, and she blows up.
Literally blows up?
Isn't that the strangest thing in the world?
Only if she's guilty.
Let's go through the Nisim that happened over here. First of all, the Ramban says that the only Mishpat of the Torah that relies upon Nisim, that relies upon a full miracle, is this Mishpat. It's a judgment. It's not like they're bringing her to court. They're bringing her to the Beis Din Shalamal, Beis Din in Yerushalayim, in the Sanhedrin up there, and this is the time where they say, all right, let's go for a miracle. Let's hope for a miracle. The most unbelievable thing in the world, where we actually say we are expecting an outright miracle to happen. That's what the Sota was. And it's unbelievable. What's the whole reason why this Mitnes happens? To give Musar. That woman should not be Mizana. That we want to cleanse Bnei Yisrael to make them Roy for the Shekhinah to be upon them. We want to make sure that there's no Mamzerim around. And once we started ruining it, and the guys started doing a rise as well, and the guys started sleeping around along with the woman, then, when the guys were sleeping around while the women were sleeping around, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're not right in the miracle anymore. I'm not going to allow the miracle to happen. And he took away the concept of Sota. But it's unbelievable that we have this concept of Sota brought up in our Torah. And it goes ahead and it says, this is the deal. This is what we're going to do by Sota. We're going to bring her to the base of Mikdash and we're going to have her be blown up. Now, this is unbelievable. The Gemara actually says in Sota, Mem Zayin Amin Alf, Misha Pasku, Misha Rabo Amin Achim, when the adulterers became many, Pasku Mayim Amarim. The bitter water stopped and that was it. You should know, by the way, it was much better when we actually had it. Because you can imagine, if a Sota actually happened, and she did blow up, even if it just happened once every generation, can you imagine what the newspaper said about it? Well, the woman did blow up. Guess it does happen, huh? Like, you did have that thing, and everybody got the muster for years to come. Women would be scared out of their minds, and men themselves would be scared out of their minds to sleep around, because they know, look what happened to that woman over there. It's the scariest thing in the world. It's an unbelievable little bit of muster that you have over here.
Now, the man also.
There you go, Yaakov. Don't worry. I have 8 tremendous nisim that happened with the Mei Sota. Number one, it's sweet when she drank it. When she drank it down, it's sweet. It didn't taste like anything bad. All of a sudden, it turned to the most bitter aftertaste you have ever tasted. If she was guilty, it turned into the most bitter aftertaste in the world. In the world. Number two, where did that bitterness come from? Bitterness, did you just say like fruity pebbles?
Burping
fruity pebbles? My friends, burping any type of, what is it? A&W cream soda is the worst you have ever had. There is nothing worse in the world. You could do anything. You could throw up in front of me, and I still wouldn't want to have a burp of cream soda in front of me. There was a person who sat right next to me the other day who was eating peanut butter and burped cream soda. I passed out. I just sat there. I fell down on the ground. I was just like, I was dead. I literally had died. Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I said Baruch Machayim afterward. I had no idea how I got up afterward. It was the most ridiculous thing. What? I'm weak? I'm going to do it in front of you. Nice was night. We're going to do a reenactment of Har Sinai when they all died, when they heard Anochi. You're going to sit there and you're going to pass out on the ground. But this is the worst smell you have ever smelled. I could have a skunk spray me for 10 minutes straight and I'd be okay with it. But this combination was the worst. All right, anyway. Number two. Where did the bitterness come from in the Sota water? The bitterness came from a Kaddish Baruch Hu's name that was erased in the water. Since when does a Kaddish Baruch Hu's name cause bitterness? Kaddish Baruch Hu's name, it should be sweetness of anything, but it caused the bitterness to come inside. Yeah, there was a little bit of dirt inside there. You can put dirt inside. Okay, it's coffee. Then it's going to taste bitter. There's no reason why this should have been bitter, but all of a sudden it was the most bitter taste in the world.
What? Sweet while it's heaven, but it's bitter in the end.
100%. 100%. That's exactly the meaning of Kenega Mita. Number three, her stomach, her stomach blew. It became very swollen. Her stomach inflated like that, and then her leg fell off. Her leg literally fell off. That's what happened in the base of Mikdash. They would say out loud in the base of Mikdash when they saw it sort of happening, they would immediately say, everybody grab her and throw her out. Get her outside of the Azara because she was literally going to go up right in front of her.
One leg fell off?
I'm sorry?
Both legs or one leg?
One leg fell off. One leg fell off. The left leg. Number three. We erase HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. It's unbelievable that we go around and we actually erase HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Nowhere else do we ever go ahead and we erase his name. It's a lav in the Torah. How in the world do we allow a lav in the Torah just because we want to give warning to other people? And we don't even know if she actually was Tameh. We don't even know if she was Tameh. This is to test her if she was Tameh. We're going to erase HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name because of a suffix? I know for Shalom, we'll go ahead. It's an unbelievable thing that we're doing over here. Number four. It says over here, we matur up a rise. We reveal her hair and we tear open her shirt to show her chest. It's an unbelievable thing. In the middle of the Beis HaMikdash, we take off her hair covering and we bare her chest. In the middle of the Beis HaMikdash, in front of all the Kohanim. Now I know that what Chazal say about that is that everybody turned their faces. And that the women were the only people who were allowed to look. And the Kohen was not allowed to look by fear of possible death. And there's a lot of things that Chassam Sofer actually asked. How could they say psukim while she had her hair uncovered? We know you're not allowed to say psukim in front of an erva. How could you say these psukim while she had her chest uncovered? How in the world could you say that? There must have been a hurim Rabbanim going on. The Chassam Sofer asked Shilas, and he bribed Sarachin on some of these Shilas. How in the world could that be? It's the most unbelievable din in the entire Torah that we allow that to happen in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash of all places. Number six, and this is what you're referring to. Hama'arim. Hama'arim is the bitter water. Hama'arim is the Gematria 496, which is the Ramach Evarim times 2, 248 limbs times 2, because there are two people that blow up. Not only does the girl blow up if she's guilty, her boyfriend blows up as well wherever he is. Wherever he is, he immediately blows up in the same way. The Pasuk says the word who, and it means the word he. It's written as the word hey, vav, aleph, and it's read as the word he. The pshat is that he and her blow up at the exact same time. That's the pshat that comes out from this Pasuk, that it says that way in Pasuk Yud Ches.
You hope he's not in the middle of another act, someone else. That big word blew up.
Way to think it through. Way to think it through. Number seven. If she's tahor, the water not only becomes, forget about it becoming bitter, it becomes beautiful and the most. I guess you could say the most filling water you've ever had. It goes in and cleanses out all of her limbs. If there's any sickness in her body, it takes care of all the sicknesses, and then it goes through all the limbs in the body and makes them straighter, makes them fuller, makes them into a perfect body. You know, a perfect healthy body in front of her husband. And one more thing, it's going to help out the baby, because we know that if she's not guilty, she's going to be zocha to be able to have a baby. It beautifies the baby so that the baby will be a very, very beautiful baby that comes out.
A woman technically could take,
which Chana did by Elkanah, which is part of what Eli's problem was with her. It's a Chassam Sofer in this week's parsha also as well, that when he said she was a shikora, she's a drunk, he said she could have been kshera and gone into hiding in Nida and Sota, I mean, and pretended to be a Sota and then come to me and gotten it in a good way. Instead, she went and she's a shikker. She went and got drunk instead, and that's what he was so upset about. It was very upset that Chana didn't do that. That Chana was going to, but didn't do that. Number eight, and the last one, if she's not Zakai to blow up because her husband also did a sin, there are times when you won't blow up because your husband did a sin as well, then in that case, the water becomes a snake inside the kid's stomach, inside the woman's stomach. It becomes a snake inside there, the snake stays there and bites the stomach until everything is said and done. The most unbelievable thing in the world. She doesn't die, but eventually she dies a horrible, painful death.
What about her husband, though?
Her husband does not. Her husband does nothing happens to her.
Isn't it worse to slow die painfully than blow up?
Yeah, 100%. She doesn't have the schus of mesota happening to her.
She dies or no?
She eventually dies.
What she did is not worse.
She's not zokah to the kapara. That's what ends up happening.
Her husband also did a sin.
The husband gets punished for a different thing, but not through sota water. Sota water is something else entirely. By the way, does anybody remember the Gemara in Sota, where the Gemara in Sota says that one of the women, there was a woman who ended up becoming a sota. She stopped by her twin sister's house, and she told her twin sister to go in her place to the Beis HaMikdash. Her twin sister went in her place. Nobody could tell the difference. She drank the sota water and she was perfectly fine. She came back and she saw her sister, and her sister said, "I survived, everything's okay." The other sister kissed her, and through the kiss, some of the water droplets entered inside the other sister's mouth, and she ended up blowing up right there. The sister that was telling me ended up happening over there. It's the most unbelievable din in the Torah.
I can't
the absolute most unbelievable
this.
Din in the Torah. There were those were the tremendous nisim that were there. Let's hold on a second. It says like this. It says when it refers to the sota, it starts like this. Dabro b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem ish ki siste ishto. When his wife goes astray, siste is a weird word. It should be the word sate. Turn around or turn somewhere. It should be the word sita or sate. Not the word siste. Why do you add on that letter of sin? So Rashi says, Shanu Rabbi Sanu, our rabbis taught, Einam in often no often ad shetikonis ben ruach shtus. Adulterers do not commit adultery until there's a spirit of shtus inside them. To which the Berba Sada catches him right there. He says, what do you mean? All Averas are based on the ruach shtus. Every Avera, it says, nobody does an Avera elim kein nechnas bo ruach shtus, unless the shtus goes inside you. Why is Sota specified that we say, here is a ruach shtus, while by other places Rashi is seeming to say, no, there's not that much ruach shtus. Here's an answer. I will tell you right now, you're going to argue on this answer, and I believe you're right in your argument. The argument is a good argument. I'm bringing this out for a point. I don't believe that, I wouldn't say that this is necessarily the truth behind it. But I'm just telling you what the Berba Sada says to bring up a point. point that I'm going to bring on, that I'm going to add on to it. Says the Berba Sota, when it comes to a regular Avera, for example, I want to wear shatnez. I don't want to put on tefillin in the morning. One of those. You have a mitzvah like that. In order for you to do it, it's really, or for you to not do it, it's basically based on tithing. The Satan doesn't really need that many excuses. He doesn't go about and try thinking his way through. You have a tithing to wear this suit. The suit has shatness in it. You don't care. You really want to wear this suit. The fact that the Satan goes up to you and says, listen, buddy. I want you to go out and wear it because of this and that and give you all these reasons and sibos and all these things all over the place and all these things around, he doesn't really need to do that. You really want to wear the suit. That's him, you want to wear the suit. You have a taiva to do it. Something doesn't really have to get involved. You don't want to get up for shacharis. You don't want to put on tefillin. You just don't want to. It's not the satan who's saying to you, just go back to sleep. You're saying to yourself, go back to sleep. It's more your taiva that's doing it than the satan. There is a little bit of the satan involved, but the satan is not the main instigator. The instigator is you. You can only blame yourself for not getting up for shacharis. You can only blame yourself for not putting on tefillin. You can only blame yourself for wanting to wear shacharis. Sure, is the satan doing something? The satan is doing something, but not as much. When it comes to znus, when it comes to sleeping around, it is more the satan, it is more the yetzer hara than it is you yourself. Why? She says like this. If the guy, now we're dealing with married people, the guy wants to sleep around, or the girl wants to sleep around. No, number one, a woman does not usually have a powerful taiva for bia. That's number one. A woman does not have that powerful taiva. They have a taiva for it, but it's not powerful enough to make them want to do certain things at certain times. It's not powerful enough for them to do it. Number one. Number two. Women can fulfill that taiva through their husbands. This woman is married, right? The woman can definitely fulfill this taiva through her husband. Her husband is around. He's warning her. Her husband is definitely there, and the husband does have the taiva. So if she wants to do this act, she can go ahead and do it with her husband. Oh, but she's saying this person's better. There's a medrash that says that there's no difference between people when it comes to the act. The act makes no difference whether it's with one person or the other. And she knows that. She knows that there's no real difference behind it. But the satan is convincing her, no, you got to be together with that guy. It's not her that's doing it. It's the ruach shtus that's inside her that makes no sense. What's shtus? Shtus means it makes no sense. There's nothing to this. It's garbage. Why would a person even think of doing this? It's more ruach shtus that's making her do it than it is a taiva, as opposed to any other mitzvah in the Torah. Now, I agree. That's a little bit strange. I would think it's more of a taiva to commit an erva than it would be by anything else. I thought it would be the exact opposite, but that's how the Beis Masada looks at it, and I like the svara, even though I don't necessarily think it's true nowadays by everybody. I don't think that's necessarily true nowadays by everybody, but it's a crazy line. That's why Rashi writes, it's a ruach shtus here. It's a ruach shtus here. Why? Because by everywhere else, it's not really ruach shtus. It's your taivas that's making you sin. The ruach shtus is involved, but it's mainly your taiva, and there's also ruach shtus. Here, it's mostly a ruach shtus, and also a taiva. And also a taiva, because she could fulfill her taivas in any other way. She decided to do it this way. Why? The satan's fully involved over here. Vayomim yamei bikurei anavim. Vayomim yamei bikurei anavim. Those words mean, and those days were the days of the ripening of grapes. Those were the days when the grapes were ripening. When is that pasuk written? When is that pasuk written in the Torah? Anybody know? Vayomim yamei bikurei anavim. Those days were the days of bikurei anavim. No, it's in the Torah itself. It's coming up soon. Parshas Shlach by the Meraglim. When the Meraglim came back, they spied out the land. It says, Vayomim Yemei Bikurei Anavim. The days were days of Bikurei Anavim, of the first grown grapes. And that's what they brought back, right? They brought back a big thing of grapes. 8 of them had to carry. That's how big the grapes were. They brought them all back. Listen to this pshat. The Mitzvotei Shimshon says this. The Gra says it. They all bring it down. Vayomim Yemei Bikurei Anavim. The last letters, Mem, Yud, Yud, Mem, Vayomim, Yemei, Bikurei Anavim, is altogether 100. 40, 40, 10, 10 is 100 altogether for the same gematria as Sam. Sam as in the Malach of the Satan. The Satan, Sam Kael is what he's called. Sam Kael. The Sam is involved in grapes. Sam gets very involved in grapes and wine. Because we know what happens when a person drinks wine. They get a little bit drunk, they get a little bit tipsy, and they start doing things that they wouldn't have done otherwise. The way the Ruach Shtus enters her, and the way a Ruach Shtus enters anybody, is when you drink wine. I'll tell you right now, it's so pushing. People say the stupidest things when they just drink a shot.
We're not drunk.
You're right, you're not drunk. But you say the dumbest things in the world that you don't think about. Sometimes people do that even without the drinks, I agree. Sometimes people just do it. But when you drink a little bit, all of a sudden these things happen. And this is what happened with the Sota woman. What happened with the Sota woman is she drank a little bit. And by drinking a little bit, the Satan got a hold of her, entered within her as a Ruach Shtus. The Ruach Shtus took over and immediately made her duznos. Why is that so? Why by grapes? Why by wine? Where did the Satan get a hold of wine? When Noah got off the Teva, he decided with his children that the Satan was going to be a part of their lives, but he'd only have one part of their lives. He would only be a part of their lives if they would let him get involved. He made a bris with the Satan. He made a covenant with the Satan. And that bris consisted of sacrificing four animals. They sacrificed a sheep, a lion, a monkey, and a pig. Sacrificed those four to the Satan, for the Satan to have on his own. It was ki'ilu a korban for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, from the Satan himself, with Noah allowing himself to be involved in the Maisos, that the Satan would have a power in the world, but be limited in certain ways. What was the point of such a thing? And we know what the result was. After they went ahead and they sacrificed them, Noah went ahead, got drunk from the grapes that they gave, that they made the bris near. He took some of the grapes and got drunk off them. And when he became drunk off that, something got a hold of him. Ham came and either castrated him or sodomized him, whichever one it was, did something terrible to Noah. And that's what's written in the Torah itself. But it was after the bris, originally, that the Satan made with Noah. Why did they make it that way? It all refers to what happens to a person when they get drunk. First thing happens, you drink a little bit, you get calmer. You become like a sheep. Whatever you are as a regular person, you become more sheepish. You know, you start like, hey, how's everything going? You're able to go around. Think of just a cocktail party, sitting around. You drink a little bit more, you become like a lion. You start roaring. You know that guy who's laughing so hard, slapping his thigh. You know the guy who's slapping his thigh, like, ah, you know, the guy who's so loud. All of a sudden you become louder. You just become a little bit louder. Like you raise an octave in your voice. You become this loud guy screaming out loud, just telling everybody, ah, you see what that guy did? You scream out loud like a lion. Afterward, you start drinking a little bit more. You become a little bit crazier. You start being a monkey, swinging from the rafters, you know, like jumping around, jumping on top of tables, jumping up, putting the lampshade on your head, right? The lampshade all around, like dancing around. The last thing, you keep drinking, you become like the pig. You start throwing up, wallowing in your own filth, just sitting around. Nobody wants to be anywhere near you. Everybody's just like, get that guy out of here. Throw him into the bathroom and just lock him inside there. They want you out of there completely. Noach knew that and said, the Satan can only get a hold of you if you allow yourself to be bitten by that wine. Now, wine takes many forms. It's not just wine that we're referring to over here. I think everybody understands that as well. We're talking about any type of a thing that can hurt your mind in the way that you're not thinking clearly. By the way, Cholav Stam is included within the wine. Cholav Stam. The Torah says, Yirei Shamayim should drink Cholav Yisrael. Why? Because you don't drink Cholav Yisrael. Tintum Belev. There's a little bit of something in your heart. It's a little bit. It's not so much of a Satan, but there's a tiny bit of the Satan. Sugar, honey is brought down. That's why honey is not supposed to be brought in the Beis HaMikdash for the exact same reason. It's too sweet. It's too much of the Satan. You don't want that Satan inside you. But that's the pshat that Yomi Mimei Kuri never was exactly that. That the pshat was, once you let the Satan get a hold of you, then you're gone. So what's the natural result? You see the Sota go ahead and drink a little bit. Sota drinks a little bit. Then after, what happens to the Satan? So what happens to the Satan? The Satan grabs hold of her, makes her sleep around. Somebody who sees that, what's he going to do? What's the result of that Sota? What's he going to do? He'll say to himself, you know what? I'm never going to drink wine ever again. So following Parshas Sota is immediately Parshas Nazir. Parshas Nazir. What comes right afterward is you have a Nazir who comes along and he says, I'm not going to drink wine ever again. I won't go anywhere near grapes. I'm not going to go near anything because I don't want to have these haivas. A Nazir, it says the word kiyafli. It says in the beginning of the Parsha, Parshas Nazirus, because kiyafli lindor neder and perik vav. When you decide to go ahead, when you make a pella, when it's a wonder. Guys, think about that. It's a pella to become a Nazir. Who in the world, in the right mind, wants to separate themselves from wine? from grapes, from stopping themselves from going to a basic varos and growing their hair long and making themselves look ugly. You're not allowed to play around with your hair. You're not even allowed to touch your hair for fear that you might come to pull out a hair. You can't comb your hair. You might not even be able to shower during that time with your hair because you're not allowed to let a hair fall out of your head. A Nazir has to be very, very careful with his hair. Very, very careful with his hair. Such an unbelievable concept. That's the pshat of a Nazir. Kiafli, the Pasuk says. It's a pillow that anybody's willing to let themselves be that far away and are willing to let themselves be that way.
It's good that the wine is for the satan, so then we're required by Hashem to drink it every week on his holiest day of the week.
Can you explain that why? The only time that we're allowed to drink wine is when? You're doing a mitzvah. It's some type of a mitzvah.
What I'm saying, you could have thought of something that wasn't.
No, it's bidavka that. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows you have a type. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows, we spoke about this before. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows you have a type for everything in this world. He knows you're going to have a type for wine. So we put something in the world that will allow you to fulfill that type while doing a mitzvah at the same time. At the same exact time. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows you like treif food. So he made foods that taste exactly like treif food. He knows that you're going to like to eat, you're going to like to have this type of wine. So he made sure that you would drink wine, but only when I tell you to. And when you do it through a mitzvah, it's not going to affect you. But you can only do it through a mitzvah. I don't allow you to do it any other time unless there's a mitzvah involved. People take that, well, it's a mitzvah, it's a kiddush. Then I can go ahead and do it. It's the middle of half Torah, it's technically a kiddush. You go ahead and you make it. That's when people take it a little bit too far, but that's the idea behind why it's allowed. But a nazir is going ahead. You know what we find out about a nazir? You can tell if the nazir did his deal for the right reasons, for the wrong reasons. Is he doing it for gaiva, or is he doing it l'shem shamayim? Because look what happens to him. Does he accidentally drink wine? Does he accidentally fall upon a cemetery? If he does, he's got to start all over. Chasam Sofer says, if he lasts all 30 days as a nazir, and he's able to go all 30 days without stepping in a cemetery, without drinking wine, he did it l'shem shamayim. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to fulfill the thing all the way through. But if you didn't make it, you made a mistake, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you make that mistake. Listen to this line. He made you make that mistake because he knew that this is going to happen to you, and he wanted to make sure that you know you're going to mess up if anything like this happens. He wanted to make sure that you knew that. And the Nazir will have to start over, and the second time maybe it'll work. If you don't do it l'shem shamayim the second time, you'll do it a third time, and you'll keep going over and over and over again. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that it happens again and again and again. We're going to end off with a vort that I'm finally going to be able to say in full. You're going to love this vort. In the Haftorah, anybody know what the Haftorah is about? Talking about Naziris in this parsha. Anybody remember? Shimshon. Talking about Shimshon. With Shimshon and Samson making him into a Nazir for the first time, the Malach appears in front of Ashes Manoach, in front of the wife of Manoach, and appears in front of Ashes Manoach and says, you're going to have a child. The child's going to be a Nazir. He's going to save the Jews. But listen to this wording. Hu yachel lehoshias Yisrael. He will begin to save the Jews. Now, the question the Chasam Sofer asks is, what does that mean, he'll begin to save the Jews? They're already being saved. What does it mean, they'll begin? They're being saved by all the Shoftim. Shimshon is no different from any other Shofet. And where's the beginning of the Savior? When this salvation is greater than any other salvation, why was Shimshon known as the ultimate salvation? That's number one. Number two, Yaakov gave a bracha to Shevet Dan. The bracha was, he saw a snake biting. Somebody was riding a horse. A snake bit the rider. The rider fell backward. The rider fell backward. And he yelled out, Lishuaska kivisi Hashem. For your salvation I hope, O God. That's a very, very strange thing over here. Why, if you say that that all refers to Shimshon, the rider on the horse was the Plishtim. The snake in the path was Shimshon. Shimshon came along and bit the Plishtim, because at the end of his life, what did Shimshon do? He's standing in that huge coliseum. He's got pillars in there. He pushes down the pillars. The whole thing falls down. All the Plishtim die. All the leaders of all the Plishtim people, they all die. Now that's a true salvation. That's an unbelievable salvation. He killed all the leaders of the Plishtim. The kings, the queens, the princes, the leaders, they're all gone. And he killed himself as well. That's a true salvation. Why after that did